Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is going for episode 189 on a rare morning recording. Not that you're necessarily listening to us in the morning or in the evening. We don't know when you're listening to us. We're just glad you're listening.
And we're glad it's morning. That means neither of us are at work.
Some of us by choice. Well, let's jump into our topics this week for the show. The first one is news about news. So the North Korean news media, which is state-run and for the most part, a mouthpiece for the
best Korea.
Yes. I don't know if this comes from the great leader himself, but the North Korean state media endorsed Donald Trump for whatever that's worth.
I wonder how often the North Korean state media and the U.S. corporate media have been on the same page, because they kind of are. And with the amount of coverage that Trump has gotten for as little actual ideas he has, I feel like our media has done pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. I think when North Korea, always a pinnacle of, I can't even complete the sentence. Yeah, it's that's probably a really bad sign that people should recognize when North Korea is endorsing a candidate.
If that doesn't get brought up in the general election debates, then the Democrats deserve to lose.
Trump, coincidentally, is holding a rally around here today in the evening. They're closing streets off in downtown San Jose, probably to keep people like me from.
You should go. Go get a hat. Make America great again, Alan.
Exactly.
Or if you could get one of those butt plugs Rush delivered.
Oh man. Well, we'll see how that goes. I know a bunch of people that live downtown now, and I'm looking forward to the posts that people make about that. Hopefully there are no riots. Let's just hope not. kind of speaking of places where people post things, Facebook is in the news, but not because of anything Facebook is doing, but because an apartment complex in Salt Lake City, Utah, has made an addendum to their rental agreement that they plastered all over the doors of everyone that lives in that apartment complex to say that they are changing the rental agreement to include what was it? They have a Facebook page, and that they're keeping the right, or they're holding the right to post pictures of apartments and even people from those apartments on that Facebook page. And in addition, everyone that's in that apartment complex has to like that Facebook page, and that's being enforced by their rental agreement, which I don't know if that's okay, but it certainly isn't a thing.
Well, they put up these add-ons for their rental agreements and posted them on their doors. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to sign it, because you can't be forced to sign an add-on,
sure,
to your contract. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that people are smart enough to figure out you don't have to sign it.
Well, it seems like, if you can't extort Facebook likes from, people that live in your building, who can you extort Facebook likes from?
Anybody else.
So, by the way, we're putting an add-on to the to our podcast, that if you listen to our podcast, you are compelled to like us on Facebook, tweet us on Twitter, and you know, we'll even throw in plus ones on Google Plus because we're that kind of podcast. No, not a thing. Don't worry.
We've now completely changed the entire soul of our podcast.
Well, if you would like to voluntarily tweet at us or Facebook us, like us on Facebook, like our Facebook page, stuff like that, it'd be great. We enjoy the interaction. We had some fun last week. I forget who posted it.
Caroline
posted it, right? The in Japan, there's a plan for the when they do the Olympics there to have a satellite that will fire off small projectiles from space that will burn up in the atmosphere to cause a man-made meteor shower. What could possibly go wrong?
That is so a thing. Let them fight. Yes.
We're gonna keep an eye on that one to see how that develops. If that becomes
how horribly that goes.
if that gets any more traction, I'm sure we'll have to petition the space faring powers that be to get a hold of that one. We'll see if Elon can put one up on the next SpaceX launch, maybe.
Maybe. Which they've now, speaking of Elon and the SpaceX, they've now landed on that barge like four times.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, which is good.
That's great. Reusable rockets, yeah. Well, moving on from wherever we just came from.
That shitty place called Salt Lake City.
over to China, where they just recently had their high-tech expo, and one of the things that was shown was something to kind of deal with the gridlock and the commute issues and hopefully reduce some of the pollution that plagues the area, and that's to have electric buses. But not only are they electric buses, because even buses would have to contend with all of the car traffic and bike traffic and everything else. A group there wants to have elevated buses, and the proof of concept kind of model that they made is it's a bus that seems to be as wide as at least two lanes of traffic, and it kind of sits, it straddles the lanes of traffic, and it's tall enough to clear the cars and whatever else would be underneath it. And then the bus part is just kind of above it. So in the video, it just looks like this monster like swallowing the cars as it travels.
It's like a bus catamaran.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting looking. It looks like it would just travel on regular roads. And then the wheels essentially are very, I guess they're mounted very narrowly, so it's hard to tell if it's on a track or if it, you know, is steering itself. But
I hope it's not steering itself.
It would just follow the lanes and be above the two lanes of traffic that it's straddling. I think the kernel of the idea is good, but I think the actual implementation of this will not work at all.
I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
It would definitely address a problem that they have.
Uh-huh.
It would be really cool if it worked, but you're going to take Yao Ming's head off.
Right.
No, it has the potential for really cool things, but also an even higher potential for disaster.
Yeah. I think the logistical problems with it occur when, one, roads turn, because it is shown as a kind of a train of cars, but as if in a turn, like a 90 degree turn, the car doesn't magically hop to be 90 degrees. It has to come through that turn, and when it's doing that, you know, you've seen the truck makes wide right turns thing. Imagine a bus that's now over your car, turning and squishing that space where your car might be into a very, very small space, and then causing really horrible things. Also, the how do they set that height right? I mean, you were joking about it killing Yao Ming, but like, are they going to ban, like,
that makes that sound so much worse. Somebody dying.
Right, are they going to limit the height of vehicles that can be in these lanes? I can see this working if it were a completely planned, like, road. Like, you wouldn't use this on an existing road. You'd have to rip out the old road and then put the new road on. But if you're going to do that, why not just have a track for public transit and then you're done?
Well, it is going to be running on rails, so this essentially is an above-ground subway.
Okay.
So they're able to construct it cheaper. It'll have less environmental impact, allegedly. I don't know. It could be good. I have reservations about it, but I'm totally prepared to eat crow if this turns out to work, because it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I think the thing that gives me pause is the other pretty cool thing that I actually rode on when I was in China. I went to Shanghai for work, and I when I was in the cab ride back to the hotel, I remember seeing signs for the maglev train. And I was like, oh, there's a maglev train. I'm going to have to look that up. And sure enough, there's a maglev train that I could have taken from the airport. And so I decided to take that on the way back. Turns out that maglev train test track, it goes from the airport not to Shanghai proper, but to like this little suburb that is out there. And it's pretty much a straight line where that is. So I actually had to take another cab to that little town, get on the maglev, and then take that into the airport area. And while there is a lot of hassle in that, the train did go really, really fucking fast.
Well, yeah. So in Shanghai, the maglev train apparently goes 270 miles an hour.
Yes.
This bus system, or whatever you want to call it, they would say it would be around 40 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But the average traffic speed in that city is 7.5 miles an hour. Traffic is so bad.
Wow.
They average 7.5 miles an hour.
Okay. Well, it has some possibility. I mean, we'll keep an eye on this one to see if the roads or the roads will accept kind of this bus. I mean, I think the pictures of this are amazing. The first time I saw it, the bus model is kind of shooting over this like row of stopped traffic, and it just looks like it's swallowing every car as it goes past.
Oh, that would be, I think it'll be horrifying to be in the cars while it's passing over you.
Yeah.
But I, at this point, I'm withholding my thing or not thing ruling. Rule TBD.
Okay. Well, we're going to stick with traffic and other traffic control things. To a company called Ekin. I'm not sure, but they're making a product called the Ekin Patrol, which is a replacement light bar for police cars. And integrated into this light bar, instead of just the lights and sirens, it's lights and sirens and a license plate reader, a facial recognition scanner, and a speed camera, all of which are not operated by the driver, the police, you know, the police officer that's in the car. Those are all centralized back to the I'm not sure, what do you call that? Central office? I don't know what you call
the police station.
There's the word I'm looking for. It's been a while since we've done a fuck the police section, so I'm not.
Oh yeah, this definitely falls under that.
So this company that's making it they've merged all these technologies into one thing, and in theory, it will integrate into whatever databases that the purchasing police organization has. They're not selling the database parts. They're just selling the light bar. So in theory, any police organization can grab this. They're selling it internationally, although I believe they're unveiling it at a convention in San Diego, like in the next week or something like that.
And it's also non-directional, so it just blanket covers everything that the car can see.
Right, right. So the license plate readers...
So it just picks all that data.
Right. The license plate readers work both forward and sideways, so the demonstration video has the police car driving past a row of parked cars at a pretty good clip. I mean, it looks like it's moving at least 25 miles an hour and it is picking up all of the license plates as it's going past. And then additionally doing that for facial recognition, just kind of identifying where the face is on the people and then kind of blocking that out and comparing it against whatever database, which if they're doing it in Russia, as we talked about last week, works very well. So what was it? 70% of if as long as they're on the Russian kind of Facebook like social media, their photo is accessible for that. And then the speed cameras are also completely without any kind of human intervention. It will detect if a car, what the relative speed of the police car is versus the other car that it's checking against. And then if it finds that car is speeding, it will read that license plate and then issue the ticket automatically.
Horrifying. Welcome to your police state.
Yay. I mean, the speeding thing, I can sort of understand if you're dealing with speeding. I still think there are some situations where speeding is warranted, if not outright encouraged, just because of, you know, how to get out of things or move away from other cars, emergency situations, and even just regular travel. If it's not really busy, maybe that's the libertarian in me coming out just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I think the ACLU will have a shit fit if this comes to America.
Well, that's the other thing, is it makes no assumptions. This company makes no assumptions about the local laws about what you can and can't do with this information. Like we had talked about in past shows about license plate readers and the retention policies that are there. This assumes that is all worked out and that you're just buying this gear to supplement and enforce those policies. Whereas I think the majority of police organizations don't have that worked out yet. And this is going to force that to the forefront about what policies are about retention of data, the right to privacy when you're out in public. There is some right to privacy. Just because you're walking around on a public street doesn't mean that you give up all rights for your images to be used, for your movements to be tracked, all of which you know, this brings up. So I think in some ways it's not a thing, because it really does kind of exemplify, you know, when fully implemented, it does exemplify a very high-end surveillance state. But I think it will force some organizations to come into it, but only after they get sued in order to figure that out. So hopefully that doesn't get too crazy in use. I don't recommend watching their promo video, by the way. It's well made in that they've clearly watched a few episodes of 24 in order to get the to get the look right. But I think it will only infuriate you if you have any kind of feelings about personal privacy and things. Also, I think at the end of it, they use a Nissan Skyline as a cop car in order to catch the speeding Ferrari which I think is, I don't know. I guess if you have the money to buy these crazy light bars on all of your cop cars, maybe you can buy a few, you know, Skylines. Why not?
Yeah, I definitely don't want my tax dollars paying for this shit.
Well, moving on to something I think everyone wants to pay for, or anyone that has experienced any kind of burn or know anyone that's been in any kind of serious burn situation, there's a technology that was pioneered for the military, but it's being opened up for civilian applications, called the Skin Gun from and it dispenses what they're calling cell mist. And what it does is, you take if someone comes into a burn ward with their skin, you know, damaged, you know, above a certain degree, I think it's second degree burn is what they're looking for, but it might apply to first degree burns as well, and certainly worse than that. But they would take a biopsy of skin the size of a postage stamp is what they're saying, and within 90 minutes can reproduce or rather isolate the stem cells that are in the skin, and then reproduce them to a level where they are are viable, and then spray them onto the damaged skin to make the healing process faster, because you're essentially spreading new skin you know, as soon as possible onto the old. The kind of traditional method for isolating the burn and then keeping it kind of in the kind of in a position where it facilitates cell growth, but then is they're discouraging infections and other things from growing in the skin, is a really intense process. It can take, you know, days and weeks, and then the healing process over that is even longer. While I will note, the promo video is not for the squeamish, because they do show a few very bad looking burns during the video that was produced with along with National Geographic, but it's really impressive. They showed a burn victim's skin supposedly 4 days after the treatment, and he had second degree burns and is essentially fine. I mean, it looked a little red, but and it might have been lighting to make that, you know, look better than not, but it's like phenomenal, the level of regrowth that's there. And that is just skin. So there is, you know, nerve damage and a lot of other things that are related to a burn, a serious burn. But at least from a surface point of view, it seems to be very, very effective. So really interesting technology.
That is definitely a thing.
Yeah. I think the use, especially the use of the person's own cells, I think is really the most interesting part, because you're not going to reject your own, you know, cells. There is potential for that in other things too, like organ donation. You're essentially, if you can donate organs to yourself, because your body won't reject its own organs if they were just grown, you know, as a backup. While this isn't, you know, all the way there yet, I think there's a lot of potential in that. Using different ways to outsmart the immune system a little bit. You don't want to outsmart it too much, because it is like keeping you alive. But it is really interesting. They're kind of staying in that vein of kind of fooling the immune system. There's another story that we're looking at is about research into treating brain cancers. And brain cancers, as you might expect, have a very are pretty much a death sentence. Unfortunately, there's not a lot that can be done you know, they're not necessarily as operable because they're within the brain. There's a lot of things that have to be done. So a lot of the therapies that are around it are based around kind of extending the life of the patient through by mitigating the tumor or holding it kind of in stasis, rather than things like, you know, cutting it out or anything like that. So one interesting tactic of it is that there are drugs that can be used to kill the tumors or otherwise limit them, but they're very dangerous to healthy cells. And so one research tactic for doing this is to engineer a virus that specifically latches onto those tumor cells. And this virus isn't something that would damage the cells. All it does is it will you know, recode the cancer cells into making a specific protein. And then what's interesting about that is that that protein can be used to essentially mask the otherwise dangerous drugs that can be used. So the drug that they would inject that would normally kill a bunch of cells, you know, in the body and wreak havoc, they essentially lock up with a different protein that when it comes into contact with that protein from the virus will express itself, and then it'll allow the drug to take effect. So the drug only takes effect in the cancer cells that have that protein. It's kind of a two-stage hit there. I like to think of the virus as kind of lasing the target for the smart bomb to come in. But
nice. Brain bombs.
It's a again thing. What could go wrong? But I think that's the approach that they're taking, because it is such a kind of rough sentence to be diagnosed with brain cancer and having that there. And so and it is an extreme treatment, but it is kind of very interesting in the way that people are looking at it. I think again, fooling your body is something that you know, the bad things, you know, have been doing really well. We should fool it a little bit too in order to get some good stuff in there. We'll see. And if speaking of being
viruses to work for you.
Yeah. Well, this is another case of that, right? We had that that story in insert episode here about the person, the CEO of the company, who infected herself with a virus in order to extend her DNA telomeres.
Yeah, this is a little different. I support this more. This is an I want to live for another 10 years because I'm normal human who is dying, as yeah. We all are.
Right. Yeah, it does have a lot of interesting potential. We'll be looking for more stuff like this too for the show. Kind of keeping in that state of like, let's extend this longer than it needs to be. We're gonna move over into spoiler territory here and talk about the new X-Men film, X-Men Apocalypse, which came out last week, something like that. Starring a bunch of people, essentially the third film in the same kind of group as X-Men Days of Future Past and First Class. So kind of the prequel ones, if you want to call it that.
The better ones.
Well, they're better,
somewhat.
So I think it was even funny because during the movie they had a throwaway joke about how the third one is often the worst one when you're talking about three movies. You know, the third X-Men Last Stand being just
the worst one.
Yes.
not including the side projects like the X-Men Origins Wolverine, I think might be worse than Last, or as bad as Last Stand.
Right. Certainly the first one. I feel like the second one was a little more watchable.
I like the Wolverine.
Yeah. But X-Men Apocalypse, I think it's funny because we talk about going into spoiler territory and we usually don't actually spoil the movies that we talk about.
Right.
But this one, if I will go ahead and spoil it, this is not a good movie. It was just
boring.
Yeah. And it felt tedious. Like I get it. You have to introduce new characters. So let's spend a third of the movie introducing new characters, but the old characters whom I like, and I liked their story, right? I liked the whole Mystique and Magneto and Professor X, that kind of like group tension about what you should and shouldn't do for the good of mutants versus not. I think that's really interesting. I thought that it just kind of took a step back for for this movie, and it's like everyone is right where they were at the beginning of First Class again, and it's like you don't have to keep starting this story over again. Could actually move forward, but it just felt obligatory, like we have to
yes.
do this.
This is
not interesting or new. This is just something we have to do. And one other thing that made me kind of bummed about, one thing that I'm bummed about of that is I liked when Quicksilver came out again. Kind of, I know when Days of Future Past came out, everyone was, including us, were excited about that scene, and they essentially did it again.
They do it really well.
Yeah.
It's one of the better scenes, but yeah. It's I don't know, they change. I know comic book movies have to change from their source material.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Age of Apocalypse storyline, I always thought the most interesting part was Angel and yeah. Archangel.
Mm-hmm.
That whole arc.
Right.
Angel. which they changed the character, like they gave him the same name, but that is, the character of Angel is not the character of Angel in this movie.
Right. And also they never went the full, like they never called him Archangel. Not that they have
no.
to, but
but they kind of gave that role to Magneto.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah. Although it was nice to see the kind of field lines bubble for Magneto, which I remember seeing in the comics a lot, the kind of sphere of magnetism that's holding everything
yes.
back. I thought it was really funny that when Mystique and Quicksilver get up to Magneto, and the first thing they try and do is bump into it, and then they decide, oh, I can just yell at him.
And they spend this whole thing, you know, bringing up how Quicksilver is his son, and he still doesn't tell him.
Right.
Like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Just tell him.
Yeah. Well, clearly they're waiting for it to be a plot point for the Quicksilver movie, which I would be on board for.
I don't think they're making that.
Yeah. No, probably not. Probably not.
I did. I mean, my favorite X-Men has always been Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they did a good job with him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean they got the look right for like Psylocke and Angel to some degree, I think. You know, I think that was good. They brought Magneto back to how he was, you know, looking for the comic. I think they did a lot of stuff to make the make it look right, but it just felt hollow. For the most part.
Yeah, yes, that is it. They put in Jubilee in the movie,
yeah.
which no one really gives a shit about Jubilee, but she very much looked like Jubilee and then proceeded to do absolutely nothing.
Except randomly be wearing like a yellow overcoat at all times.
Yeah. No, it was just like there's Jubilee in right. their X-Men uniform.
Yeah.
And then never uses her powers once. Because yeah. they're the stupidest powers.
Okay, yeah, they are kind of lame.
Fireworks.
Oh, you know, light. It makes it hard to see things. I thought the kind of from one level up, I think from the movie, there's a lot of talk about how Apocalypse is the they never actually refer to him as Apocalypse. Oscar Isaac. Oscar. His whole thing is that he's the first mutant, and a lot of people worshipped him as a god. So there are a couple sequences where he's talking about how he's, he's had all of these names over the years because he's been the origin of a lot of the religious, you know, god stories and everything else. And I thought the kind of false god aspect of that was sort of interesting. And then what I found weird was there were at least two or three points in the movie where there's an extended thing about prayers or God or how that's, you know, who's out there kind of watching over us. And I found that kind of weird to be included in the movie. There's the scene when Nightcrawler has kind of a prayer to himself, but it's used as a voiceover while they're going to the Major Colonel Stryker's like Weapon X farm. And then there's a scene later where and this movie also has like a surprising amount of kind of fallout and aftermath, which they're not addressing in very Marvel style. But
all I could think of with Apocalypse and the way they set this up was Stargate.
Well, so that
he's a gold.
Yeah. Oh no. So what was really funny was at the beginning of the movie when it's the shot of all of Egypt and everything else. All I could think of was how many just much better kind of Egyptian like sci-fi angles there have been that are just great to watch, right? Stargate is there. Not necessarily sci-fi, but like I watched it reminded me of The Mummy, the flyover of the pyramids. I'm sure if I saw Gods of Egypt, it would look like that too. But
I'm gonna see that at some point. It's now available on Amazon Instant.
Is it?
I think you have to pay for it.
Okay, all right.
It's rentable at this point.
Okay.
I feel like if I can watch it at home, I can get intoxicated enough to enjoy it.
Yes, possibly. That would require a lot, I think.
Only really watching it for Jamie Lannister.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I do think my favorite scene in the movie, in this movie, is the cameo from Hugh Jackman.
Yeah,
it was. That was a proper Wolverine.
Yeah, which I
it think, was ultra violent.
I think it's that was another thing that I disliked about the movie is that because it's a they've kind of jumped around time-wise, so like where does this fall in with like Wolverine and everything else, and part of me is like that's annoying that I have to keep track of that, like the whole thing with Moira MacTaggert. I actually had forgotten from the first movie. Like I did not remember that. I forgot that Havoc was in the first movie. So that made that a little difficult for me to kind of like, why am I supposed to know who this person is? But at the same time, I generally am fine with having multiple kind of iterations of storylines. Like that was just how the comics were. was that there were always different storylines, and I didn't have to reconcile them. It was just like, oh, I liked it when, you know, when the X-Men were doing this, but not necessarily when this other artist who did X-Men was doing that.
So I like seeing the Weapon X version with the whole headpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also they had Caliban in the movie.
Yeah.
Who I thought that was cool. They made him look like his actual character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I thought they
did. It checked a lot of boxes. Yeah. And it felt like it was checking a lot of boxes.
Yes. Yes. The only worst thing was maybe having Professor X say unleash havoc.
Yes, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just glad that he didn't say, like, you know, anything to Jean about, like, about, you know, when she said, oh, there's something dark rising inside me, I'm like, oh, like a phoenix, maybe?
Yeah.
That would have been the only cheesier thing. Yeah.
I think they still have potential to not fuck this up.
It does. It does. I think Bryan Singer is taking a break from the movies, so he's not doing whatever the next one's going to be.
Please don't bring back Brett Ratner.
One can only hope that the next X-Men movie is going to be in the 90s, since this one was sort of in the 80s.
I think it is actually supposed to be.
Oh, they're going to have to hit that nostalgia button real hard. Everyone's watching Full House.
Lots of flannel.
Friends, you know, listening to Nirvana. But they could do a lot. They could do a lot. I feel like they didn't do enough other than make Scott look like every person I wanted to punch during the 80s. They did that pretty well, actually. Yeah.
Speaking of period pieces, I saw another movie.
Yeah.
That I will give my full endorsement to.
Yeah.
Shane Black's The Nice Guys.
Yes, absolutely. I saw that a couple weeks ago, and we saved it on the show because I wanted to make sure you saw it, because it was excellent.
It might be the best movie I've seen this year so far.
It was very much in the kind of wonderful place in my heart where I keep another of Shane Black's movies, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes.
It's kind of when seen kind of in reasonable proximity to that, it feels a little odd, but it's so good. So good.
Well, two of my all-time favorite movies are Kiss Kiss Bang Bang by the same director and L.A. Confidential, which had Russell Crowe and Kim Basinger.
Right.
So it felt like, oh, you took two of my, it's the peanut butter and chocolate of my movie viewing life and put them into one movie.
Yeah.
And it was extremely funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very violent. And it was the Shane Blackiest movie of Shane Black movies. This isn't spoiling much, because I really don't want to spoil this one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about spoiling X-Men, because that movie wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But the less you know about this movie going into it, the better.
I agree.
But at the end, there's a scene that takes place at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And every goddamn Shane Black movie takes place at Christmas. It almost felt like, oh, we're just going to put this on at the end, because that's what I do.
Not impossible, yeah. I think it's a really good movie, because there are a lot of there's a lot of scenes where even just the talking and conversation is great. I mean, there is some talking for exposition's sake, not as much as there is in X-Men. There was
Apocalypse.
Yes, there were a couple points where it's like, oh my gosh, you're really explaining this. Couldn't we have just inferred that from the first scene of the movie? But
the first scene of this movie is bizarre.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I don't want to talk too much about it other than I loved it. Russell Crowe was great.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling, I feel like, was channeling Bugs Bunny. Like his comedic timing and pratfalls were perfect.
Yeah. Oh, and it's good. It's very good. I think it's very similar to, again, to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, in that if you go in with no kind of information, it's just delightful how much it surprises you as it goes.
Totally. Yeah, I don't know if there's ever been a comedy that has so much collateral damage. Like, there's a lot of gunplay and yeah. people just getting shot.
Yeah.
Just not involved.
Right, right.
For a comedy, was very, very different. You know, I don't want to spoil it other than to say, go see this movie.
Yeah.
This deserves to get your money.
Mm-hmm. Certainly more than X-Men does.
Oh, yeah. If it's down to one or the other, definitely go see The Nice Guys.
Keen. Well, let's wrap this one up, and we'll see what's coming as we're marching towards 200. Next week is going to be episode 190, so we I don't know if we have anything special planned. I'm sure we'll think of something.
We've got time.
But if you would like to help us think of that something, or even help with shows in the meantime, or even with the 200th show, please let us know. Tweet at us. Connect to us on Facebook, and go to the webpage, notathingpodcast.com, talk to the HAL 900, and we'll see what we can do. It would be fun to have you be a part of shows on the way there, and we've enjoyed everyone's kind of support and good words and everything else about the show for these last 189 episodes. Wow. Brendan, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.